there are three Sifrei Torah. That alone would give us a lot to say, but even just focusing on one of the three Sifrei Torah that we have, the Shabbos, the one that's dedicated for Parshas HaChodesh, that gives us a lot to look at and a lot to talk about, and I think we'll focus on it from three angles. One is the whole concept of the Dalet Parshiyos, specifically with leading up to Parshas HaChodesh, and I'll say a little bit about the content of Parshas HaChodesh, and then a little bit about the Haftorah for HaChodesh, which is our main agenda for this year. And they're all integrated, so we'll look at that as well. So the notion of reading Parshas HaChodesh, it sounds like from the Gemara in Megillah and Daf Chavtes and Rashi over there, that it has to do with Pesach, that we're going to see Hilchos Pesach in this section. And the Gemara tells us in Pesachim and Abav that we're shol and odarshin be Hilchos HaPesach, Kodem HaPesach, B'chzachah, Kodem HaChag. Without getting into the whole discussion now of how the Rishonim talk about to reconcile different statements in the Gemara about whether we're Darish a month before or the day of, or somewhere in between, but the Gemara does say that Moshe was Dorish Hilchos HaPesach on Rosh Chodesh, so from that inyan, there is, from that perspective, it seems like that's what Parshas HaChodesh is meant to accomplish. But there are other perspectives as well. There is a fascinating sefer, contemporary sefer, called Zmanei Reuven. It's written by Rabbi Reuven Schwartz, who's written a number of very interesting svarim. He has a beautiful sefer on the Rambam Hilchos Deis, a section about Lashon Hara that I've quoted a lot in writings about Lashon Hara. But this volume is really all about the Dalet Parshiyos. So the whole volume is about the Dalet Parshiyos, and a lot of it is a thesis about all of the Parshiyos together. So can't discuss the entire Sefer in today's slot, but just to give a little bit of a sense of what he discusses there. So he advances the theory that the Dalet Parshiyos are really one set. They are a unit. It's not stam that we happen to have a notion here about Zechiras HaMalek, and a notion there about the Tumah, and a notion there about Mashmiyim HaLashkolim, and they just happen to come around the same time of year to be clustered around the same zone. That's not the way to view it as he portrays it, and as you can imagine, others picked up on that theme also. But that there is a integrated story here, that there is a unit, and that they're all there really to be other readings. And he brings various proofs from the Gemara that it's specifically a din in Adar. He understands this to be a part of how we reflect the simcha of Adar. The marvin, the simcha on Adar, is reflected through these additional readings. Now, despite that, in this case, so we're just going to be out of Adar. So Parshas HaChodesh is going to be read on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So it just goes beyond the Adar border. But that's actually the Ikar, which is good for us this year, that we're reading it on Rosh Chodesh. As he brings various rayas to make that point also, that the Ikar reading of HaChodesh is on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So for Shabbos to be Rosh Chodesh, that's really the ideal format. So that works out very well for us. And the idea is that Adar is meant to be a Hachana for Nisan. That this is all these Dalet Parshiyos are a Kiyum in Adar, but specifically in the idea that Adar leads into Nisan. This is presumably an additional to the point that we've mentioned in the past, that we're not assuming that Mishnechmas Adar Marv Mesimcha is limited to Purim. We've mentioned that the Rashi explains Marv Mesimcha Ba'Adar Yimei Nisan Purim V'Pesach, that it is the flow from one to the other that characterizes the Simcha of Adar. So this is consistent with this notion that we are bedavka looking to have an Adar process here which lands on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That actually works out the best. And here, to connect it to the Haftorah, which we will talk more about after this, But he brings up the context of the Haftorah that we there read from the Sefer Yechezkel about the Karbanos that are going to be brought in the third Beis HaMikdash, and they start on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And the Radak explains that the notion of B'Nisan Asidan L'Higoyal, the idea that we are going to ultimately find the ultimate redemption within Nisan, it doesn't mean that we're going to leave Gullus in Nisan or whatever else it takes to end the problems. It's that it'll happen before Nisan, so that in Nisan we can begin the actual full Geula, which is the third Beis HaMikdash. So the position that B'Nisan Asidan L'Goyel is not saying that we're going to be freed from some type of Shibud in that time, but rather it means before that, so that we will be ready on Rosh Chodesh Nisan to begin the process of the third Beis HaMikdash. So that's all consistent with this idea that we are leading up to that with everything in the Dal Parshios, getting to the Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and discusses there the idea that Purim is really supposed to lead directly into the Geula, so to create this Hemshech between Purim and the theme of the Geula of Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So that's a part of what's happening here. It suggests also that maybe Parshas Parah is specifically in the middle, because Parah is meant to evoke the concept of the Yemei HaMiluim, which should precede Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And he has various proofs there, again, kind of summarizing part of what's really the thesis of much of this full-length Sefer. So I could only give kind of Rashi Prakim. But it brings proofs that there is a connection here between the theme of the Parah and the theme of the Yemei HaMiluim, and maybe that's what the picture here is. He also discusses at great length, recommend you can read it inside, I don't know how easily accessible the Sefer is, but I have one if you want to borrow it. But he details there how he thinks there's really a machlokas between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi as to the purpose of Parshas HaChodesh. So we started off saying that it sounds like from the Bavli with Rashi that the purpose of reading HaChodesh is a hachana for Pesach, and from a halachic perspective, the Hochos HaPesach. So he brings indications there that he believes the Yerushalmi and other sources understand it differently, that it's there to be ma'orer the Geula. It's there to awaken us to the theme of the Geula, and that's a part of the message, and therefore all of these components of what's happening are all contributing to that. So that's a very fascinating idea. Again, it's one that he develops over many, many, many pages, and this is just a little bit of a taste of the discussion that he has there. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, I heard from the Meir Soloveitchik that his grandfather, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, had another idea as far as integrating the Dalar Parshios into one message, and that here is a little opportunity for some synergy, that this is based on a very well-known pasuk from Yirmiyahu, a tupsukim from Yirmiyahu, which is in a Haftorah that we missed. The one Haftorah so far that we didn't get a chance to talk about, even though we read it recently, was Parshas Tzav, a few weeks ago, right after Purim. So because we weren't here on Thursday, so we didn't get a chance to discuss the Haftorah for Parshat Tzav, and it's a chaval because the Haftorah for Parshat Tzav is very rarely read, because it's usually something else. It's usually, sometimes it's a Chodesh or Para, so or Shabbos HaGadol for Parshat Tzav. So it's rare that you read the Haftorah for Parshat Tzav. I looked at a chart. I think at least for the next 12 years, I'm not going to read the Haftorah on Parshas Tzav, and didn't read it last year either. So we had the opportunity this year, rare opportunity, and we didn't get to talk about it at all. So here's a quick backdoor attempt to sneak in one reference to that Haftorah. So there is a very famous set of psukim from that Haftorah that is read only this year on Parshas Tzav, but I think it's Perek Tes in Yirmiyahu. The Haftorah contains these often quoted psukim. They are Chav Beis and Chav Gimel. Koamar Hashem, Al Yisalel, Chacham B'Chachmaso, Al Yisalel, HaGibor B'Gvuraso, Al Yisalel, Asher B'Ashro, Kiyim B'Zos, Yisalel, HaMisalel, Haskel, Yadoasi, Ki Ani Hashem Oseh Chesed, Mishpat Utsaka, Bo'aretz, Ki Ve'ele Chafatzti, Nim Hashem. I see familiar with these psukim. These are very well-known psukim. So the idea that a person should not take pride, he shouldn't take glory, not in his chachma, not in his gvura, not in his ashirus, but rather in his knowledge of the Ribbono Shel Olam, so Aaron Soloveitchik suggests that that's the theme of the parashios. We say, Al Yisrael Chacham B'Chachmaso, you shouldn't take pride in your chachma. So where do you see that message? Parshas Parah. Right? Parshas Parah is this famous paradox, this challenge that Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all men, said that he tried to figure out and it was too daunting for him. So if there's a way to emphasize that no one should take pride in their wisdom, so Parshas Parah makes that message. And Al Yisalel HaGibor B'Gvuraso, you shouldn't think that you're so strong, you're so powerful. So what emphasizes that message? Amalek. Amalek was able to attack us, was able to hurt us by coming from behind. So we shouldn't take great pride in our gvura. We needed a Kadosh Baruch Hu to get us through that. V'al yisalel asher ba'ashro, and we shouldn't take pride in our money, meaning we shouldn't think that our money is something that is just for us, without getting into kofen al midas tom issues, but that we recognize that it's there to help us be a part of the tzibur. And Parsha Shkolim makes that message. So the other three parshios are all parallel to these three non-pride sources that the pasuk mentions. And then the next pasuk that tells us ki bezos yisalel misalel, that we should make Yedias Hashem our source of pride. So then we get to Parsha Sachodesh. We read about mitzvos, the first mitzvah, Achodesh Ezelochem. So that's to make the point that that's ultimately what we are proud of. We could maybe add that the notion of the pasuk's continuation, Kani Hashem Oseh Chesed, Mishpat Utsaka Ba'aretz, so that's also especially powerful this year, because on the one hand, having Parsha Chodesh on Rosh Chodesh is nice, but also the leap year, we've discussed in the past that the leap year is an extra reminder of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Chesed, the effort that we go through to make sure that we're always going to observe Pesach in the springtime, because it's a reminder of, as the Midrash explains, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only saved us from crisis, but did so in a way with extra degree of chesed, taking us through in a time when it's more comfortable. So this message that we're supposed to remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed, so all of that then comes together quite nicely. So those are some themes in terms of the purpose of the Dalei Parshios, and specifically HaChodesh, but just in terms of the content. So there is a number of ideas just to mention briefly in terms of what we find in HaChodesh itself. So first of all, the idea of HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem as this first mitzvah. So the Sforno has a comment here, and also in Sefer Dvarim, if you put them together, which Rav Soloveitchik often emphasized, quoted many times as making this point, I think it's the basis is there in the Sforno, that one of the main issues of being an Eved is that an Eved has no control over his time. An Eved has no ability to make his own schedule. And that is something that in our freedom we are particularly sensitive to. I think we had an opportunity to talk about this sometime over the past few months, about the notion of kol yochel achsu b'chatzi hayom, that we have certain halachos that regulate the treatment of a poel, but anybody who works by the hour, anybody who works on a time schedule, so we're nervous that that creates a problem of avadai heim v'lo avadim la'avadim, that we are freed from our slavery so that we should be servants of God and of no human being. And selling our time gets us a little bit nervous, so we find limitations on how that works, on to what degree a person can absolutely be meshabed his time to anyone else. So the idea of HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem is saying that time from now on is up to you. You're going to have to decide how you're going to spend your time. You have that control. I think it was Rasalvech's point that the idea that avadim are pater from mitzvah sasei shazman grava, it's a whole different sense of the p'tur of mitzvah sasei shazman grava for nashim. Avadim is a whole different idea, but that it connects to this, that Eved has no sense of time, and Eved is not in control of that, so we have to recognize and appreciate what achodesh hazeh lachem means. It means now, from here on in, you have time to work with, to figure out how to best utilize it. And of course, that's one of our greatest challenges. It's a challenge not only in the Yeshiva University, it's a packed schedule, where you really have to figure out how to fit everything in, but it's a challenge for everyone to know how to use this unbelievable asset that we have, and to figure out how to best make ourselves the avodim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we can be. So that's a very powerful idea. I think we're Futner, if I recall correctly, we're Futner in the Pachir Yitzchak on Pesach has a similar point where he talks about the idea that we learn certain concepts of this reason, not the din specifically, this reason, makim and the mitzvos, but certain ideas that are in the context of Pesach. So, for example, we say, "Ushmartem es hamatzos, mikan she'ein machnisen es hamitzvos." That we have a drasha that we, same way, we're not supposed to let matzos become chametz, so we also can't let mitzvos become chametz. We can't let mitzvos be neglected and leavened, so to speak. We have to get to them quickly. And the relationship or the concepts, as Rav Hutner explains, is to kind of show that we can exert bilus over time, that we don't let time control us, but that we stay on top of it. And that's a big yesod of what it means to be free, what it means not to be an eved, and to be somebody who's able to direct his attentions to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's very much a big part of the message here. Hi.
Is that idea of Aliyach Mitzena when it comes to reason by mitzvos? Is that you should, if there's a mitzvah that you could start doing, you should do it right away? Or is it that you should finish a mitzvah that you already started?
So it's a good question. We have a number, without getting into all the details about this, but we have a number of concepts that appear throughout Shas that seem to address the same kind of thing, and in different language, and there's a discussion. Some of them are connected to Psukim and to Drashos, and some aren't. And the question how they relate to each other. So on the one hand, we have the reason Magdim and the Mitzvos. We have the notion of Ein Ma'avirin al Mitzvos. We have this idea of Ein Machmitzin al Mitzvos. The Gemara has a phrase also, Shihuye Mitzvos Lo Mishlahinan. So there is a lot of literature about, are these the same idea, are they different ideas? Presumably at least two of them are different ideas, but what exactly they dictate. So whether they mean setting the mitzvah at the earliest possible opportunity, or not passing over one mitzvah for the other and saying, oh, I'll focus on what I think is more valuable rather than the opportunity in front of me, they have different applications. Presumably, it doesn't mean in any of them to do a mitzvah more quickly than the mitzvah deserves. You know, if it means that the mitzvah is going to be neglected, you know, and that we have, for a number of reasons, an opposite attitude, that we want to show that we value mitzvos, so we have concepts of hiddur and the like, and we also have the notion that we shouldn't do two mitzvahs at once. And the idea that if we shouldn't look like we're trying to bundle the mitzvahs together, and Rashi explains in Maseches Sota that that's because we're concerned it's going to look like it's all a burden. Right? It's going to look like we are trying to get rid of this quickly. So we don't want to make it look like the mitzvah is something that we are rushing to get off of our table. So we have to put all these into a framework of what's going to be the most b'chavadik of the mitzvah. So some understand the idea of reason like the mitzvos is itself a hiddur, that we show that we're excited about something by getting to it quickly, by making it the first priority. But doing it quickly is presumably, if it's too quickly, it's presumably if it's more quickly than is appropriate, so then that's going to show the opposite kind of attitude. So you have to figure out exactly how to make sure all these ideas are in balance. As far as reconciling the multiple sources, it's also possible that some of it is about showing a hiddur, some of it is about showing that we want to prioritize the mitzvah and it's the most important thing to us. And some of it is about not letting the situation elapse and not letting the mitzvah get away from us. And there's a lot of lumdus to say about that. But in any event, these are some of the themes that contribute to this idea. So it seems that Pesach is a time, and the imagery of matzah, you know, the idea that matzah can turn into chametz, which is its fundamental opposite, and go from mitzvah to esrkaris. It's such a easy way. It's just a question of letting your attention lapse. It's a question of letting time get away from you. That very much illustrates a lot of what's the concern here. So Achodesh Hazeh Lachem has that message. It's also worth noting, and here just is something to take as a Mar Makum as well. So Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, who always has such fascinating things to say in his comments on Chomesh, so if you look here in Parshas Bo, in the section of Achodesh, so he explains the idea of Achodesh Hazeh Lachem is Chodesh, the word we use for month, you know, comes from Chodesh, meaning renewal. And the theme of Rosh Chodesh is that Rosh Chodesh is the beginning of the time of renewal. And the idea of Kiddush Al Pi Hariyah, the idea of looking to set the month based on looking at the moon directly, so that is a very important part, symbolically, of our avoda. It means that we should renew our attitudes, renew everything that we do by coming back to Hashem at the time of the moon's renewal. So he then goes on to say at great length, and I always find this to be important because nowadays we get a lot of pressure about Yom Tov Sheni. Everyone asks, why do we need Yom Tov Sheni? And not so into second day Yom Tov, whether they're visiting Eretz Yisrael as Mechutz Laretz or even complaining about it in Mechutz Laretz when they're here, and why do we need it if nowadays we have a set calendar and it's not a suffix anymore. So Rav Hirsch discusses this in this piece. It's a very kedai to read, that he explains that the idea of Kiddush Al Pi Hariyah is such an important part of our avodah, and the fact that we have a set calendar is necessary because it had to cover all the time of Galus and all the times when it wouldn't be possible to do Kiddush Al Pi Hariyah. But it's very much b'di'evit in that sense. It comes at a great loss. It comes at the impact of us not being able to have this experience of Kiddush Al Pi Hariyah. So this is something which we should keep in our consciousness and recognize what that means. And so therefore he understands the idea of Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galus, the idea of having this second day of Yom Tov in the context of Galus, not because we don't know when, especially now that it's established as a din, that it's not because we just don't know when Yom Tov is, so we have to account for both possibilities. So even now when we know when Yom Tov is, it's crucial that specifically in Galus there should be a zecher to what we're missing by having the set calendar and not having the opportunity to actually go through the process of Kiddush Al Pi Hariyah, and therefore that's something that we have to appreciate. So it's a little bit of chizuk to those who find Yom Tov Sheni difficult. If you think about the alternative, also about trying to schedule all the fancy Pesach programs and the like, and you wouldn't know when Pesach's going to be, until the moment, you know, so that's different kind of stress. But in any event, so this is Rav Hirsch's point, that the Yom Tov Sheni should be appreciated for its role in helping us connect to this idea of Kiddush Al Pi Hariyah, which here especially it's honored as the first mitzvah that's given to Klal Yisrael as a whole. So the symbolism of that mitzvah is very important. Rav Moshe Feinstein in this Darash Moshe, you can take a look over there also. So we have a whole theme that's not just enough to believe in creation of the world, you have to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's guiding of the world is Hanhagas HaOlam, and therefore we connect that to Nisan specifically because the world needs Torah, and Torah doesn't exist without Hachana, and this is the Hachana getting us to the Kabbalah Satorah, and that's all part of the message. The Yalkut Shemoni emphasizes also the special nature of the Jewish people, that we follow a lunar calendar, that we count from the moon rather from the sun. As we talked about, why that brings us to the point where we need a leap year, because our seasons fall out of sync otherwise, because we follow the moon. So a number of times Chazal emphasized the special quality of the Jews that we follow the moon. There are some who suggest, so on the Sefer Oel Moshe has a discussion about this, that the moon is a makabel, right? That the sun generates its own light and the moon reflects it. So the idea of the moon as a makabel represents the nature of the Jewish people also, and that's something that we are proud of and that we emphasize. Okay, yes, sir?
Just to clarify one more time, Rav Hirsch. So he's saying that Yom Tov Sheni helps us appreciate the fact that we should really be doing this. And this is a bidyevet, and we should really be doing this based on the
Yeah, I'm not doing justice to it because it's very long. A lot of what we're referencing today is too long for me to do justice to in one shiur. We're trying to pack together a lot of different things. So I recommend reading it inside. But that's the gist of it. It's not simply that, oh, we don't know when Yom Tov is, so therefore we have to make an extra day to be safe. Especially Bizman HaZeh, when that's not our reality, but that it's a part of the whole Galus process, is that we are embedding into our observance of the Antif the fact that we are disconnected from the Kiddush Al Pi HaRiyah, and the Kiddush Al Pi HaRiyah is a fundamental message for us in terms of what we're doing, in terms of how we relate, and therefore, specifically in the context of Galus, this is highlighted. Keep us focused on that. Okay, so just to say a few words about the content of the Haftorah itself, we alluded to a little bit before. So the Haftorah of HaChodesh is from the Sefer Yechezkel, and it is the Nevuah of the third Beis HaMikdash, and it talks about the process of beginning, like we said before, about the Karbanos being brought on the first of Nisan, and there are extra karbanos in order to celebrate the Chanukah Beis HaMikdash for 6 months, going from Rosh Chodesh Nisan until after Sukkot. The Ramban, in his commentary to Chumash, the Ramban writes that, this is Parshas Nasa, that to celebrate the consecration of Beis HaMikdash, that's the mitzvah d'oraisa. How exactly it plays out in terms of the details, so that's a Haraz Shah of the Navi at that time. But the theme that there's going to be some celebration, that's a mitzvah d'oraisa. So the psukim here in the Haftorah, they tell us that the Nasi is going to partake. And Rashi suggests, so who's the Nasi here? The Kohen Gadol. So why should the Kohen Gadol be involved here? The Kohen Gadol, we know, his job is Yom Kippur, basically. So what's his connection here? So if you look in the Mitoch HaOhel for Haftarah for HaChodesh, there is an article by Harav Shechter Shlita, where Shechter discusses this question of why it should be that the Kohen Gadol possibly or is specifically involved in this process. And he notes that elsewhere in Chumash, you also find it sounds like the Kohen Gadol is involved in things that we know he's not actually necessary for. So, for example, we find that by the menorah in Parshat Baloscha, it sounds like that, like it's Aaron and his role, that Kohen Gadol has to do it, but we know that's not actually the din. And by the Haktaras Ketoras, it also sounds like that. So he quotes the Sforno in Vayikra, in Parak Chavdalet, that explains that the Kohen Gadol is necessary on Yom Kippur because of the extra presence of the Shekhinah as represented by a cloud of smoke in the Heichal. So in the Midbar, all the 40 years they were in the Midbar, so there was a cloud over them as well, a cloud over the Mishkan. So it could be that that which is in the Heichal has a greater kedusha when that cloud is present, and maybe you need a kohen gadol then, just like Yom Kippur. So the ketores and the menorah taking place in the heichal, maybe there's again this extra presence, this extra intensity of the Shekhinah, and therefore maybe it would be necessary, you would have thought it would be necessary or better for the kohen gadol to be involved. So the Sforno in Pekudei writes, based on his understanding of this Haftorah, that the third Beis HaMikdash won't just have smoke, it'll have a fire inside to represent the intensity of the Shekhinah. So Rav Schechter suggests, if you combine all these ideas, that maybe that's what's going on, that because this third Beis HaMikdash is going to have an even more intense presence of the Shekhinah, so maybe it's like Yom Kippur every day, and the presence of the Kohen Gadol is appropriate just as it is on Yom Kippur. Rav Rivlin, in his essays, so he works off a different understanding, that the Nasi that's referred to here is not necessarily the Kohen Gadol. He doesn't talk about that at all, but he assumes that the reference is to the future king. The king at that time will be the Nasi here, and he notes also that here this is a particular emphasis of the Ashkenazim. There's a difference between the Sephardi Haftorah, Sephardim, how they read the Haftorah this week, and the Ashkenazim, how they read the Haftorah this week. The Ashkenazim beliefs start two psukim earlier and end one pasuk later. And those additional psukim is where the Nasi is brought in. And as Rav Rivlin discusses, that the Nasi, in the beginning, the additional psukim that are added on there, has to do with the nation, the people's obligations towards the Nasi, and in the end, it's the other direction, the Nasi's obligation towards the people. And he discusses there the whole notion of the king, of a melucha, and how really it's a balance. You know that it's not an easy concept, that in Sefer Shmuel, I think we had the opportunity to discuss this also this year, that in Sefer Shmuel, so we find the whole Parsha Samelech, where Shmuel tells the people, don't be so sure that you want a king, and you might not be happy with what he does, he could do this, he could do that, he could do all kinds of different things to you. And there's a machlokas in the Gemara about the Kol HaOmer Parsha Samelech, that which is described in this section about the Melech. Do we say Melech Mutterbo or Melech Aserbo? Is the Shmuel is just saying that you should know it's dangerous to have a king because the king just practically could do whatever he wants, even if it's wrong for him to do that? Or are we saying more than that, that he's actually allowed to do these things? And this is one of the possible sources for the concept of Dina de Malchus Adina, that among the different suggestions as to where we get Dina de Malchus Adina from, one possible source is Parshas HaMelech. So as Rivlin discusses there, the concept of Malchus is really a very tricky balance because it can get out of control, but it's really there to serve the people. It's really there to be a sense of avdus rather than sarara, and it's there because the glory of the people is represented through the king. So he notes that if you look in Chumash itself, now, what do we find about the appointment of the king? So the Torah says, Song Tasim Alecha Melech, that you should appoint a king. Gemara says, Shehei Maso Alecha, you should be one who is able to be an imposing figure. But in contrast, or in counterbalance to that, so those four words, Song Tasim Alecha Melech, but you find, I think it counts as a six psukim, where the Torah puts limits on the king. And we're told they can't have too much money or too many susim or too many wives. And we're also told that he has to have a sefer Torah of his own that he carries with him that represents the fact that he is subject to the Ribono Shel Olam and that he is acting out of a sense of responsibility. So this is a part of what we struggle with in the world, that and on the one hand, we have this concept of a national leader who is supposed to work on behalf of the people and have a sense of glory that represents the role that he is occupying on behalf of the people. And that clearly carries with it a certain risk that it's going to go to his head and that he's going to get out of control. And the concern of Lord Acton said that power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So we have a constant tension between the need for a figure who will be able to guide the nation and what can happen when that goes to his head, so to speak. So I sometimes discuss in the ethical and legal class, I talk about different systems of government. So Winston Churchill is quoted as having said that democracy is the worst form of government, with the exception of all others that have been tried so far. And we discussed there, you know, what does that quote mean? So it's not stomp that it's good, but it's bad, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. But there's a specific phrasing there saying it's the worst form of government, but still better than all the others. So how could it be both? So Pashup Shah, what he means is that from an efficiency perspective, it's very bad. Because to have everyone making decisions on an equal basis, whether or not you know what you're doing, whether or not you have any expertise, that's not going to be the most effective way to run a country. It's going to have all kinds of problems and all kinds of flaws in the decision-making process. But the alternative can be worse, because it says that it's better than all the others that have been tried so far, while at the same time being the worst, is that all the others run a risk of persecuting the citizens, of abuses of human rights. And the only way that we have found throughout human history to protect against that is having some system of democracy which protects the individual. So we're making a trade-off between an efficient, effective government and the dignity and humanity of the individuals who make up that population. And because it's so important to us to protect that second factor, so we make a sacrifice on the first and we compromise the efficiency of our government in order to protect human rights and the dignity of the individual. So when you think about the fact that, as far as we know, and there's a lot discussed about what form a future redeemed Jewish people, future redeemed Eretz Yisrael, the government will ultimately take. So without taking an absolute stand on that, where there are discussions in some of the rabbinic literature as to could there be different possibilities, but we know that the Mashiach is conceptualized as a Melech, and it certainly sounds like the ideal that we have and that we are aspiring to is something along the model of Malchus, again, with the possibility that that might take different forms. But it's specifically interesting to think about from this perspective that, as Rivlin discusses, you see that the model of the king has not always worked out, that it comes with various challenges. But a part of the vision of a redeemed future where everything is going to be lishma and everyone is going to be filled with knowledge and the Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence is going to be blatant, and we're talking about a Melech that is chosen by God, so in an ideal world, so then a Malchus would go back to being the ideal form of government. That the reason it's not is because of the various human frailties and weaknesses that compromise or create a threat out of that system. But ultimately, the vision for a redeemed world could make a Malchus possible in all the best senses of the word. So whether or not that's the exact form it's going to take, but that's also a part of what this Haftorah is doing for us, is helping us to look to aspire to a world where that's possible. So to go back to the ideal you mentioned at the beginning, that the Zman HaRuven was advancing, that if the idea of Parshas HaChodesh is to help awaken us to the dream of a Geula, to the possibility of a redeemed world, so all of these ideas should be very much on our mind as we listen to all the readings this morning, this Shabbos rather, listen to Tazria with its particular content, and also the theme of Rosh Chodesh and the theme of Parshas HaChodesh all coming together to get us in a mindset that will prepare us for Pesach and to be fully appreciative of the themes of Geula and the hopes for the future. So I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos. Should be only good things, and I'll see you on Sunday. Okay.